Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin.
Good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing? I hope you said well. I got to remember to hit that button. Still got the training wheels on. Welcome, welcome. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you have a paranormal need or you think you have a paranormal need, we can help you out. But just remember, California is a huge state, and it might take us a couple days to get out to you, but we do have people within range. Okay, where do you find us? You can find us on all the social media, being Facebook and YouTube and all those good places, and TikTok and blah 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 blah. Just Google us. Use Dr. Google. My doctors call it Dr. Google. Use Dr. Google and you'll find us. Okay. Couple of announcements to make. Next Wednesday night on TikTok, we are going to be doing something a little different. I've been seeing a lot of people asking about their deceased loved ones and what happens after they pass, and you know, are they still with them? So I thought I would take a night out on TikTok and talk about that. So I'll do readings at the same time, but I'm going to be talking a lot about you know, what happens after your loved ones pass, because I think a lot of people, you know, want comfort with that, and I agree, you know, so I don't have a problem with that. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about that. Plus, starting the week after next, we're going to be building a gingerbread, just like we did last year. We're going to be doing a gingerbread house, and that'll be Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. And I have a penis gingerbread house that my sister got me. But I also have an Oreo cookie train. That's going to be new. It's going to be hard for me not to eat the cookie. So, yeah. So, we got a couple projects to build. And then one of my friends has gotten a Lego Christmas tree for me and a Lego Santa sleigh. So, we can have all kinds of good, fun projects to do for the show. Okay? All right. Now, getting back to this show. My guest tonight is one of my most favorite authors. And I have four or five that I have on this show in rotation. And if you guys listened Sunday afternoon when I read from the creepy Christmas holiday storybook, that was written by our guest tonight. And we started that book. We just started scratching the surface. We're talking about all the European legends and all that stuff. We haven't started scratching really deep in that book. And that book's a humdinger. So I think you guys are going to like it. But tonight, we're going to be talking about a topic altogether different. And, you know, this stuff, you hear horror stories about this stuff. There's movies made about stuff like this. You know, and you don't think that it's true. And my guest tonight, she does her research. She's got a book about this, about what happened to this poor woman. And we're going to talk about that tonight. So let me bring her in, because it's such a fascinating topic. We're just going to zing right into this. And I think you guys are going to be interested in all this. I think it's something that will perk, what's the part? Take your attention, okay? To get your attention. So here we go. Let me bring her in. Sylvia Schultz, my good friend, Sylvia Schultz. Let's see, there we go.
Charlotte, oh. Hi. Oh, so good to join you again.
Oh, my gosh, I'm thinking about you all year. Of course, you know, we whipped that book out. Boy, everybody that heard that book on Sunday is just like, oh, my God, I want to hear more.
Oh, good. That's exactly the reason I wrote it.
Oh, my gosh. You are. You're one of my favorite writers.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Tell people about you, because I know I have a new crowd from TikTok that's coming over to listen to this show. So tell people about you.
Well, I have been a paranormal investigator for over a decade, and I am also a writer, so I decided to combine those two things. I've always been very interested in history. I really believe that you can't understand the ghost stories of a place without knowing the history behind it, because that's why we have these stories, is the history that people have lived. So I am all about discovering history and the ghost stories that go along with it. I recently, well, My most recent book is another of the true crime slash ghost story books. But the one before that was Gone on Vacation, Haunted Zoos, Museums, and Amusement Parks.
Wow.
Ridiculous amounts of fun.
I'm intrigued.
Joyce, hi. There's a message in here with the chat from my good friend Joyce.
That.
Hello. Hi, Joyce.
That's cool. That's cool. See, we're being watched.
Yeah.
Even an hour earlier, we're being watched. That's pretty cool.
Well, I am thrilled that you're sharing the stories from Spirits of Christmas. That is wonderful. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
I love that book. It's got a little bit of everything in there. You know, it goes back and talks about Krampus. People like to hear about Krampus. You know? Did you see there was a picture circulating on Facebook a while back of some store? I don't know if it was in Germany. I don't think it was a U.S. thing. But it was Krampus, and then they had a 7-foot Krampus statue.
and it
was animated. They were selling it for Halloween, and it was animated, and he was holding a kid by the feet upside down.
Nice. That's awesome.
My poor sister, I'm like, I want this. I want a Krampus away from you. But I haven't seen it since. It showed up, I think it was the year before last, I saw this thing circulating around Facebook. I thought of you. And I thought, oh my God, yeah.
Good. I'm glad that made you think of me. Hello, Chris, in the chat. Hiya. Thanks for joining us.
We got a good bunch of people watching. A lot of the numbers don't, like, this is two up there, but there's more than that watching.
Good, good. Welcome, everyone.
Yeah, another one. There's another one. You know, it's the stalkers that don't go in the chat room.
Lurkers.
The lurkers. That's why I'm Caesar's ghost, because that's how I used to go around the forums.
Gotcha. Okay.
Well, tell me about this poor woman who got locked away in this crib thing.
Yes.
That looks like it looks like a covered wagon without the cover on it.
That's a good way to put it. That is a good way to put it. You know that I am very interested in the history and the hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital in Bartonville. It's only a 10-minute drive from my house, which is wonderful.
Right.
One of the most beloved spirits on our hilltop is the spirit of Rhoda Derry. Now, the story of Rhoda Derry is, it's one of the great failures of the mental health care system in Illinois, and it's one of the great success stories of the Peoria State Hospital. Rhoda was born in 1834. She moved with her family to Adams County, Illinois. She was the youngest of 9 children, maybe a little spoiled, we don't know that, but she was the baby of the family. And when she was 16 years old, she did the most natural thing in the world. She fell in love. She lived in a very small town in Adams County, Illinois, and she fell in love with the son of a neighboring farm family, a fellow named Charles Phoenix. Now, there was one person who was very much against this relationship. We don't know how far this relationship went, but we do know that after they had been courting for a couple of years, when they were both 18, Charles asked Rhoda to marry him, and she said yes. Now, the person that was very much against this relationship was Charles's mother, Nancy Phoenix. She was very much against Charles marrying Rhoda because Rhoda was the youngest daughter of this family that was very, very poor. The Derrys were dirt farmers. They didn't have land to call their own. In the census records, her father, Jacob, is just shown as working other farmers' land. He didn't have land of his own. Now, Charles, on the other hand, was the oldest son of only 4 children. So he stood to inherit his father, Frederick's land, when Frederick passed away. And Nancy Phoenix was not about to have her baby boy Charles marry one of these dirt poor Derrys. So she confronted Rhoda in the street one day. And she said, if you do not release my son from this engagement, I will curse you. Now, talking about witchcraft in front of Rhoda Derry was a really good way to get her attention very, very quickly. The reason for that is this: her grandmother, Moll Derry, her father's mother, was known as the fortune teller of the Revolution. Moll and her husband Valentine had grown up in Germany, and Valentine was conscripted by the British as a Hessian soldier to fight in the American Revolution. Moll was not about to be left behind, so she disguised herself as a man and came over to the colonies with Valentine. When they got there, Valentine switched sides and fought against the British, fought for the colonials. And Moll, still dressed as a man, fought at her husband's side. When the war was over, they settled in Pennsylvania, and Moll became a very well-known practitioner of Pennsylvania Dutch hex magic. She was known for counties around as being able to lift and cast curses. So, talking about witchcraft in front of Rhoda, who was Moll's granddaughter, was a really good way to get her attention. A few weeks after this confrontation between Rhoda and Nancy, Rhoda had some sort of break with consensual reality. She started hallucinating. She would scream that there were invisible witches sweeping down from the corners of the cabin to attack her. Her mother, Rachel, was about the only person who even tried to understand what young Rhoda was going through. Her methods were a bit questionable. Rachel was sympathetic to the fact that her daughter was having these hallucinations, but what she did to combat these was that she would keep a pistol in her apron pocket. And when Rhoda would cower under the dining room table of their cabin, screaming about these invisible witches, Rachel would whip this pistol out of her apron pocket and start firing it around the cabin to drive the witches away. So, yeah, not exactly sure how helpful that was. Rhoda's parents had her committed to the asylum in Jacksonville for 2 years. Before this happened, Nancy was aware of the damage that she had caused. These are small towns that the Phoenixes and the Derrys lived in. Nancy was well aware of what she had done. She had approached Rhoda's brother Jeremiah in the street and asked to be brought to the dairy cabin to see Rhoda because she said, I want to get in to see her. I want to tell her I was kidding. There's no curse. I just didn't want you to marry my son. But Jeremiah refused to have anything to do with her. Rhoda didn't want to have anything to do with her, and I don't blame her a bit. The Phoenixes ended up moving out of the area somewhere west, and I've never been able to track them down. So Rhoda was committed to the asylum in Jacksonville. Now, public asylums at that point in American history were places where you could go to get better, but if you didn't get better in 2 years, you had to leave and give up your bed to someone who did have a chance of recovery. Rhoda was a very violent patient. She was locked in her room every night, and every morning the guards would find her wandering the grounds calling out for Charles. And the guards would escort her back to her room and they would say, "Who let you out?" And Rhoda's answer was always the same: "Nancy Phoenix let me out." That's something we've never been able to explain. I have my theory about it, but we've never really been able to explain that part of Rhoda's story. So Rhoda's parents cared for her at home as long as they could. But in 1860, her mother died. And Jacob could no longer care for Rhoda. She was still very violent. So he made the heartbreaking decision to have her committed to the Adams County Almshouse. Now, almshouses in the middle of the 19th century had the potential to be deeply awful places. If you had $25 for a license and an empty barn in your backyard, you could open up your own almshouse, because the people of that time didn't think that the mentally ill could feel cold or heat or hunger. In some cases, they were treated no better than animals. The Adams County Almshouse was not like this. This was a county-run almshouse. It had board oversight. It was on a beautiful piece of land, a little stream running through it. But the sad fact is that almshouses or poor farms or poor houses are simply a place to go to get three hots and a cot. They were not prepared to deal with the mentally ill, but poor people go crazy too. That's that's all it is. And the people at the almshouse in Adams County were absolutely unprepared to deal with someone suffering from mental illness as deeply as Rhoda was suffering. They took her in. Her father just dropped her off and left her there. He didn't know what else to do. Rhoda was very violent. She would lunge at people. She developed a condition in the almshouse called pica, which is a compulsion to eat inappropriate objects. So she would crawl around on the floor on her hands and knees, and anything she found on the floor, a pin, a penny, a nail, would go straight into her mouth. She would lunge at people and try to pick the buttons off their blouses or shirts and pop them into her mouth. If you gave her a piece of fried chicken for her lunch, she would cram it into her mouth, bones and all. So for her own safety, the superintendent of the almshouse had Rhoda put into something called a Utica crib. This was standard issue for mental asylums at the time. A Utica crib it looks like a baby's crib. It sits on the floor. It doesn't sit up on legs, but it sits on the floor. It looks just like a baby's crib, but it also has a barred top, which locks. These cribs were, again, used in mental asylums at the time. There was a patient that was interviewed by a newspaper who said, "I suffer from sleepwalking. If a nurse locks me in a Utica crib overnight, I know where I'm going to wake up. And that's a great comfort to me." But these devices were not designed for use any longer than overnight. Mm-hmm. And Rhoda was left in her crib for weeks and months at a time. Her hips atrophied from not being able to walk around. Hi, Sharon. and she her hips drew up, her legs drew up to her hips because she was not allowed to get out and walk around. When she was let out, she was cared for by other feeble-minded patients. Nobody really paid much attention to her. Sometime in the first 10 years of this treatment, Rhoda decided that she no longer wanted to go to watch the world go by through the bars of a cage, and she clawed. She beat on her face in her distress so much that her teeth fell out. We think that when she put a nail or something dirty into her mouth, it lacerated her tongue and she got gangrene in her tongue. She was no longer able to speak. She spent decades in this situation. Now, Dr. George Zeller became the superintendent of the Peoria State Hospital. He operated on the mandate that no one was beyond help. He wanted to help everyone. He asked other asylums to send him their most horrible, difficult cases. He wanted to help everyone. So how do you prove that? How do you prove that no one is beyond help, that no one is beyond saving? You go around to the poorhouses and the almshouses of the state of Illinois, and you cherry pick the most wretched, abused cases. That's exactly what Dr. Zeller did. He came to the Adams County Almshouse and he found Rhoda in her state. She had been moved from the Utica crib by that point. She was in a box bed, which again looks like a baby's cradle, but is big enough for an adult. She would not tolerate the feel of clothing on her skin. So she was in this box bed naked. She was only covered by a thin canvas sheet. Dr. Zeller took one look at Rhoda Derry and he said, "This patient is coming with me." And the superintendent of the almshouse didn't want to let Rhoda go because he figured that the almshouse was going to be blamed for her condition. And Dr. Zeller said, "Either this patient comes with me or I shut your institution down effective immediately." September 26th, 1904. There was a storm going on that day. So there was a washout on the tracks. So the train between Adams County and Bartonville, Illinois, got in very late. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning that the attendants got the call that the train had finally arrived on the hilltop. So the nurses and the attendants went down to meet the train on that little landing that they had up there. The patients, about 60 of them, were being transported from Adams County on boxcars. So the nurses escorted the patients out and they were standing on the platform, kind of shivering in the cool night air, not exactly sure what was about to happen to them. And the attendants went onto one of those boxcars and they saw a great big wicker laundry basket at one end of the boxcar. And this was kind of unusual because usually patients only arrived with the clothes on their backs. But the attendant said, "Well, you know, I guess this is patient's clothing, so let's take this basket out too." So one attendant on either end of this basket, and they humped it off of the boxcar and set it down on the platform. And just as they did that, the lid of the laundry basket opened and the clothes parted, and there sat Rhoda in amongst the clothes. Her hips had atrophied so much that she was no longer able to sit in a chair. She had to be carried around in the basket with the clothes around her to comfort her. That night, for the first time in 44 years, Rhoda Derry slept in a bed with clean white sheets. The nurses knew her excruciating history, so they made sure that Rhoda would experience the hilltop in any way that was left to her. She could no longer see, of course, but the nurses let her sit out in the garden on a blanket and feel the sun on her face and smell the flowers whose colors she could no longer see and listen to the birds singing. They took her to dances. There were dances every Saturday night at the Peoria State Hospital. And they took her to these dances so that she could hear the music playing. It is said that Rhoda never smiled when she was at the Peoria State Hospital, except for when Dr. Zeller came into the room. Either she recognized his voice or his cologne. I don't know what it was. But whenever Dr. Zeller walked into a room and Rhoda was there, she lit up. She knew that he was her savior. Rhoda was with us for about 2 years. She probably developed tuberculosis in the almshouse, but in the summer of 1906, her case became full-blown. She was moved from her cottage to Dining Hall A, which still stands on the hilltop. And Dining Hall A is where Rhoda Derry passed away on October 9th, 1906, the day before she would have turned 72 years old.
Wow. What an incredible story.
Jennifer, thank you for all the comments that I've been watching.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow, yeah, I've been watching them come out too. It's an incredible story. I remember talking to you, you know, when you wrote the book about the actual institution. I remember telling you, I said, you know, it reminds me of that movie, The Snake Pit.
Yeah.
You know, this really reminds me of the movie, The Snake Pit. If you guys haven't seen The Snake Pit before with Bette Davis, go rent it, do whatever, but watch The Snake Pit. because this stuff actually went on. It's hard to believe that this stuff was allowed to go on.
Right. And this was an almshouse, and it was the middle of the 19th century. And yeah, I mean, I tell people about the Peoria State Hospital, and you say haunted mental institution, and your mind goes all American Horror Story. It goes all Snake Pit on you, and you assume that there was pain and fear and abuse. And it is my privilege and it is my joy to tell people this was not the case at the Peoria State Hospital. This was a place of deep compassion. Dr. Zeller rescued Rhoda, and he used her as an object lesson. He had an open-door policy for any reporter, any statesman, anybody in a position of power. He had an open-door policy. You can come and visit our asylum any time of the day or night. We have nothing to hide, and we want you to see what is going on in some of these almshouses, and we want you to see how we treat our patients.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, Jennifer, it's okay. It's just I'm getting used to the system here. This is
Oh,
kind of my
no, Jennifer,
first.
sweetheart, it's fine.
Okay,
That
it's fine.
is where, well, that is where Rhoda's earthly story ends. Rhoda is buried on the hilltop. There are four cemeteries on the hilltop. Well, between three and five, depending on who you talk to and how you divvy up the cemeteries. But there are three main cemeteries on the hilltop, and Rhoda Derry is buried in Cemetery One. Now, cemeteries one and two got started at the same time, and when they filled up, they started Cemetery Three, Four. Now, Cemetery One was for the patients whose families had money. There are over 4,000 people buried on the hilltop, 4,132 people buried up there. That represents only about a third of our patients that passed away. Two-thirds of them, easily two-thirds of them, got sent back to their families. So, Cemetery One was for people whose families had money. Cemetery Two was kind of the pauper's burial ground, where if somebody was unknown, they didn't have any family, their family couldn't pay for an elaborate burial, they got put in Cemetery Two. That, as I was writing 44 Years in Darkness, I got to thinking now, Rhoda had no family. By the time she passed away, she only had one brother of her eight brothers and sisters left. Her parents were long gone, and she only had one brother left who never came to visit her, as far as we know. So obviously her family was not around, but she's still buried in Cemetery One. And the only thing I can think of was that Dr. Zeller and his nurses cared so deeply for this patient in particular that they put her in a place of honor. So, yeah, they made sure that she has a place of honor. And her grave is still visited today. Whenever people visit the cemeteries, they go and visit Rhoda. There are always flowers on her grave.
The
And they
question I
sprinkle.
have with this is, you know, the other place had a staff. The other place had a staff of nurses. You'd think there would have been one nurse there that had enough sympathy to even report what was going on, unless it was a thing where they were afraid to lose their jobs if they did.
Yeah, I don't know. I have read the reports from the state almshouses. They had to do a report every year, and I got a hold of one, and that's when it was from. It was from 10 years, it was from 1870. It was from 10 years after Rhoda had been there. And they mentioned her. They mentioned the woman in the box. And that's how I know that sometime in those first 10 years is when she did that terrible damage to her eyesight. Because they mentioned that, yes, we have a patient who is blind and she's so violent that we have to keep her in this crib. And it would be nice to think that there was some staff member that had the compassion to care for this desperate, desperate woman. But she really never got that care until she came to us, until she came to the Peoria State Hospital.
The other question I have is, if she was so violent, how did they get her to calm down at Peoria?
That's a good question. I think it is because she realized that she had finally reached a place of safety and security. Mm-hmm. She was no longer trapped. She was allowed to sit out in the garden. She was allowed to have the run of her cottage. This is part of her ghost lore, and this is what I find really deeply fascinating. Rhoda picked up the habit of chewing tobacco when she was a teenager. And even at the Peoria State Hospital, she still had this habit of chewing tobacco. So if she knew that you had some tobacco in your pocket, she would kind of crab across the floor on her knees and her hands, like she used her fists as hands, as feet. And she would crab across the floor and tug on your pants leg and beg for some chaw. Now, Rhoda loved that entire hilltop so much that her spirit can be experienced anywhere on the hilltop, but especially at her grave. If you're standing at her grave and you feel a tugging on her pants leg, on your pants leg, and you smell chewing tobacco, that's Rhoda trying to get your attention. She knows her own ghost lore. Uh-huh. She realizes that if that's how she manifests, you're going to know that is Rhoda Derry trying to communicate with you. Uh-huh. And I think that's just the most fascinating thing in the world. Now, I did talk to a psychic medium there several years ago. I attended a two-day investigation on the hilltop. There were three different paranormal groups that all came together for this two-day investigation. So I was with them for Friday night and for Saturday night. So I told Rhoda's story several times. It's in Bartonville. The hilltop is in Bartonville. It's just south of Peoria on the same side of the river. Mm-hmm. So I told Rhoda's story several times Friday night. And this medium, Lisa, was just stewing about this all day on Saturday. She said, "Oh my gosh, this is so awful. This poor woman suffered so much during her lifetime. And in the afterlife, she's still reduced to crawling around on the floor and tugging on people's pants. Like, what? How is that even fair that she's still suffering so much in the afterlife?" So she and the rest of the teams got to the building they were exploring Saturday evening. And I will tell you that in half a second, Jennifer, I promise. So Lisa and a couple other female investigators were in the hallway of the building. And Lisa became aware that there was a spirit sitting on the floor next to her. She became aware that it was Rhoda Derry because it was sitting on the floor. And she told me that Rhoda looked up at her, made eye contact, and then got to her knees and then stood to her full height. Rhoda was a tall girl, and she stood to her tall, beautiful height and just gestured at herself to say, "Look, see, I'm whole on the other side." So I was just floored by this story. I'm so grateful that Lisa shared this with me. So the name of the book is 44 Years in Darkness. And Rhoda's name is spelled R-H-O-D-A, Rhoda Derry, D-E-R-R-Y.
So, now, as a paranormal investigator, looking at it from that perspective, if I was to go there, I'm hoping to. Nancy, Matt, and I are talking about taking our stuff on the road.
So excellent.
Pop in to see you.
Look me up.
Absolutely. But what I would do is carry some tobacco with me.
Yes.
That's what I would do.
Yes, she responds very, very well to that.
Yeah, reach down and give her some tobacco. How does she eat? I mean, here's the question, because you said that she had like a, you know, that she may have had a laceration, that something happened with her tongue. So how did they feed her?
The cut eventually healed, thank goodness. Okay. I mean, it didn't kill her. It just robbed her of the ability to speak.
Okay.
But she was able to take in nourishment.
So, I can see how she thrived, though, because, I mean, here she was locked up inside all that time. And when they finally got her off the fresh air, it must have been just liberating.
Absolutely.
Even if she just had to lay there and feel the breeze on her face or whatever, because, I mean, yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah.
With her. In fact, I can kind of see her right now, just kind of going out there and just feeling that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for letting me share that story. It's one of my favorites.
Absolutely. How long did it take you to research all this?
Oh, golly. I would say probably a year and a half. Mm-hmm. Hey, Chad. Chad is
a
relative. You know, his name is Chad Derry. He is a relative of Rhoda's. She never had to send him to the room, but he's a relative of hers.
Wow.
So,
welcome,
yeah.
Chad.
Hey, Chad. Thank you so much for joining us. I think it took me about a year and a half, I guess, to research it and then to write it. People were so generous in sharing their stories with me. And since it is a historical story, I was able to look at the almshouse records. I was able to look at census records. I was not able to find a whole lot on the Phoenix family, but I found something very, very interesting in the Adams County records in general. There was, and let me see if I can get these details right. There weren't very many details about this, but there was a murder in Adams County, and Charles and his father, Frederick, were called to testify at this murder trial. And Charles was just in his mid-teens when he did this. So he was, I think he was like 12 or 13 years old. It was before he met Rhoda. And he was called upon to testify in a murder trial. So this kid had to have had a good head on his shoulders.
When you think about her, and let me ask you this, because I'm also a writer, obviously, a newspaper writer. And I got to admit, you know, even as a crime court reporter, there are stories that affect you. You know, and you have to stay as neutral as possible, you know, from my perspective, when you're writing this stuff. How do you, you know, you're not a newspaper reporter, so you're under no obligation to stay neutral. How do you write something like this without really feeling, you know, really having the feels for it?
Oh, I had all the feels.
Yeah.
I had all the feels. Anyone listening and anyone commenting on this thread, when you read the book, you are going to read a section of the book that is very personal to me. Rhoda's story is very personal to me because when I was working on this book, I was trying to not only write a historical story and not only write the modern ghost story, but also I wanted to bring this experience that this young woman had in the middle of the 19th century into modern times. I said to myself, what is a parallel to this that I can talk about that has a little more resonance to people living today in the 2020s? And I realized that I knew the perfect person to write about, my mother. My mother died when I was 5 and my younger sister was 2. And she suffered terribly from mental illness all her life. And she had some parallels to Rhoda's story. The difference is that my mother ended up not being able to fight her demons. She tried. She tried very, very hard. And her death was not a suicide, but it was a horrible accident that came about because she was over-medicated. And the difference between my mother and Rhoda Derry is that Rhoda survived. Right. And yeah, that's what fascinates me about Rhoda is she was in this hellish existence for 44 years, and she survived it.
Very strong will, very strong woman.
Yeah, yes, she was. Yes,
But
she
that
was.
situation, I can tell you that if I'm locked into it, in a cage like that.
Oh yeah, gosh, I've seen this. We're still trying to find Rhoda's Utica crib, and it's somewhere out in the museum system, but we did locate an original Peoria State Hospital, Rhoda Dairy. We did locate an original Peoria State Hospital Utica crib, and it was at the museum at the Southern Illinois University. And I tracked it down, and some people from the Peoria State Hospital Museum went down and got it, along with other artifacts from Dr. Zeller and from the Peoria State Hospital. And I look at that Utica crib, and I think to myself, I would not last 45 minutes in that thing, locked in that thing. And she spent 44 years. So, yeah.
If you guys want to look one up on Google, it's UTICA crib. That's what they're spelled like. That's why it reminded me, when I saw the photo of it, it reminded me. That's why when I said in the beginning of the show, it reminded me of like a cover, like when you see covered wagons, because they have that curve over the top, and then they put the canvas over the top. That's what it reminds me of. Only this thing is metal, and you're locked in.
It's very small.
Were those things, was her being locked up like she was, did they use those frequently? Were they used really frequently for the incorrigible patients?
Oh yes, that's the Utica crib was designed at the lunatic asylum in Utica, New York. Some superintendent or doctor designed this thing, and like I said, these. Oh gosh, I left out a part of Rhoda's story. Utica cribs were. Hi. Thank you so much. My dear friend David Youngquist has hopped on the thread.
Thank you all for coming.
Yes, the Utica crib was a standard issue in lunatic asylums, mentalist hostums. James, hi. I was going to mention you a bit later, James, when I was talking about Rhoda and the what she told you at the cemetery.
Oh, cool.
It was standard equipment in mental asylums, and Utica cribs were usually lined with a thin hospital mattress. They were designed to keep patients safe from themselves. They were designed to keep violent patients from hurting other patients. And like I said, that fellow who was that there was a reporter who was trying to dig up dirt on mental asylums, and he talked to some patient there, and this patient said, "I sleepwalk. I'm perfectly happy to be locked in a Utica crib all night because that's a great comfort to me." Rhoda's crib was not lined with a hospital mattress. Hers was lined with straw, and there was a strategically cut hole at about her the level of her hips, and there was a
Of
tray
course.
underneath, like a rabbit cage. And for the exact same reason, they would pull out that tray and empty whatever mess she had made. So, yeah.
The spelling of her first name again.
My name? Oh,
No,
S
Rhoda.
Y. Rhoda's.
Yeah.
Rhoda's is Rhoda. And her last name is Derry.
Okay.
And the book is 44 Years in Darkness.
I do have a link to the book on the information thingy on the information thingy and Sylvia's name and everything is there. And it's so great. It's great to talk to you about this, but it's sad. It's a very, very sad story, when you think about this. But there was a lot. Look at, the way they handled mental health through you know, through the years. Because, I mean, yes. You've got things like the Sudoku Crypt. And I was just thinking about my mother. And my mother got to the point with her old age, with her bed, that she would get out of bed at night and fall.
Mm.
And restraints were a no-no.
Mm.
And I actually had a bed with rails that I could pull up. Well, that became a no-no.
Oh.
So I used to have to get real tall chairs and block her in at night. Or she would fall out. And what makes me think about this Utica crib is, what, you know, for whatever reason, they didn't use hand restraints on her, you know, to hold her in at night.
Mm-hmm.
It was much easier with this Utica crib.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... There was a reason they were standard issue at mental hospitals. And actually, when the Peoria State Hospital began, there were a couple of Utica cribs there for Dr. Zeller to use. And he believed very firmly in absolute non-restraint. So the only reason this Utica crib survived that we do have at the museum is because he would fill this crib with straitjackets and cuffs and straight gowns and things like that. All of these things that were used to restrain patients. And he would take them around to state fairs and other gatherings, and he would show them off, and he would say, now look, if your loved one has to spend time in our institution, this is what you will not see being used. This is what we avoid at all costs. What he did with the other Utica crib that was at the Peoria State Hospital was he started a zoo on the grounds, and he used the Utica crib as a rabbit hutch. And there was one that was filled with hay. There were deer in the zoo that the patients were allowed to care for. And the Utica crib was filled with hay for the deer. So, yeah, he repurposed all of that stuff. Yeah.
It's just good that there was at least one doctor, you know, that was kind in all this.
Because, Dr. You know, Zeller is still, it's still a name to conjure with, either even today.
Yeah. Because there's still a lot of stories coming out of that era of these mad, I'm not going to say mad doctors, but these doctors that believed in restraint, believed in the ice water things, you know, going on, you know,
ice water baths,
put people in ice water baths and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. What do you think ghost hunting with her? Is she open to deal with you guys? Obviously she is, right?
Whoa. Rhoda is very friendly. She loves having her story told. She will appear quite often to people who are sensitive to that. My friend James Barrow, who has hopped onto this thread, she and James have a special relationship. Whenever James goes out there, of course, he visits her grave, and I do as well. And James shared a story with me from way back in the day. He was standing at Rhoda's grave, and he said, "Oh, gosh, Rhoda, I'm sorry. I was going to bring you some chewing tobacco, and I forgot. I apologize." And he caught an EVP of her saying, "That's okay. I can't chew anymore." So James has been very, very compassionate in helping Rhoda and talking to her whenever he comes there. And he went to Adams County Gosh, it was about this time last year, I think. It was December of last year that he went down to Adams County and visited the site of the former almshouse, and he visited the places where Jacob and Rebecca are buried. And he did a little bit of recording there and told Jacob and Rebecca both that their daughter was safe and had been being cared for. James in the thread says, "Oh man, now I'm blushing. I'm going to talk you up, James." Oh man. So yes, he's very compassionate when it comes to Rhoda. And he says, "You know what? I went and I talked to your dad. I talked to your mother. Okay. And I tried to get them to pass along a message for you. And yeah, it's just, yeah. I've got a big sweet spot for Rhoda Dairy.
For the gentleman in the chat room, that's the descendant.
Rachel, what did I say? I said Rebecca. But didn't I say? Yes, Rachel. I'm sorry.
Yeah. How did the family feel? You know, did you reach out to the family? Did you try to find family members at all?
Or did they? Hi, Ron. I did, actually. There was a short biography of Rhoda that was written by one of her other relatives, a fellow named D. Doc Dairy. He wrote a biography of her, and I reached out to him, and he was very encouraging as to my project, and was very helpful in pointing me towards, I believe her name is Joan Dairy, that did a lot of genealogical research, and I was able to utilize some of the research that she had done, and everyone was just so gracious and so helpful.
Absolutely. Chad. Was the family shocked when the family of today, were they shocked when they found out what went on, or were they aware of it from the stories being passed down? Because they probably know.
I think by the time Rhoda got to the Peoria State Hospital, most of her family had passed away. The only family member she had left was Jeremiah, her brother, who lived in, I want to say, somewhere in Iowa. It wasn't terribly far away. I think it was in Iowa. And as far as we know, he did not come to visit her. I think he may have been aware that she was in the Peoria State Hospital because there was a great big newspaper write-up about her when she arrived at the Peoria State Hospital and again when she passed away. Manchester, England! Oh, hello! Oh, I'm so glad you're tuning in. I love England. I was there for 3 weeks last year, and I'm desperate to go back.
England is great.
I love England.
England is wonderful.
So yeah, there was a great big newspaper write-up at a couple of points in Rhoda's life. And we do have those newspaper clippings. And again, Dr. Zeller just used this situation as a way to say, hey, look, here is a place where your loved ones can come and be safe and be cared for and be cherished.
I just find this story so sad, but it's fascinating at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of those sick fascinations that you have. And then to think that as a ghost, she's well aware of herself.
Yeah.
She's well aware of herself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's next for you?
Ooh. You now? Well, I am working on a sequel to Gone on Vacation. It's going to be called Gone on Vacation, Endless Summer. But before that, I am current. That's the one I'm doing next. I have to take a second to read Virgil's message. Wonderful. Oh, Virgil, I'll have to look you up when I'm in Manchester. The book I'm working on now is straight true crime, nothing paranormal about it. Do you recall in late April, early May of 2022, there was a jailbreak. There was a jail in Lauderdale County in northern Alabama, and the supervisor of the jail ran off with one of the prisoners. And they went from Florence, Alabama to Evansville, Indiana, and that's where they were brought to ground. And they had a short but furious chase, car chase, and they had sheriffs and marshals and policemen after them. And so that's the story I'm writing, the story of Casey White and Vicky White. So that's the one I'm working on now.
I remember that story well.
Yeah.
I'm a crime, you know, I'm a crime reporter. That's what I do. Just like today, you know, this earthquake that happened on the West Coast, it was killing me because I had to be out running errands. You know, but every time I would stop somewhere, I was on the phone checking everything out because that's what I did for a living for 20, for 30 years, you know? So it doesn't leave you. You just want to do your job, get all the details that you can get, you know? If you were to describe this book, I don't know if I hit you up with this question the last time I talked to you. You're standing on the strip in Las Vegas. And there's other writers like you there that have little bookshops. And you're trying to get them in to check out this book on Rhoda. What do you tell people as they're walking by?
I tell people that this is a story about a young girl who fell in love and it ruined her life.
Okay. All right. That works. That really hurts.
That's my elevator pitch
That's an
for that book.
understatement. That's an understatement on that one. Yeah. It ruined her life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I cried. I mean, when I first heard about this book, I cried. I can honestly say that. It really upset me. I thought about it for 3 or 4 days, you know, and then I bought the book. And it made me cry even
Thank
more reading
you.
it,
Thank
you know.
you. Thank you.
And
Yes, it is available as an audiobook, and
yeah.
the publisher that set up the audio reading told me that the narrator told him that she broke down in tears a couple of times when she was reading it, when she was recording it.
Just to see what that poor woman went through. Nobody's offered you to do a movie or anything on this yet, have they? Because this would be something that Hollywood would want.
That would be amazing. That would
I
be
see
very, very
Hollywood go looking at this thing and going, "Yeah, we want that sucker." You know?
cool.
Well, I mean, look at what they did with the what was that one movie they did with oh my God, the black actress. I'm sorry, I can't. My mind is like jello. Halle Berry.
Oh,
That one they did with
yeah.
Halle Berry. You know,
Yeah.
this should be right up their alley. I mean, this
Yeah.
is fantastic.
Yeah, it would.
Sylvia, you are a terrific writer.
Thank you.
And I want to get you back on. You
All
have lots of
right.
books we could talk about. Lots of books, lots of things we could talk about. I want to thank everybody in the chat room that came in tonight, especially Chad Derry. Thank you so much, Chad. It was a very
Yes.
honor to have you in here.
Thank you very much.
Jennifer, my online husband. What a joke we have. My online husband. Pamela, I see Pamela popped up in here, and everybody else that came in, thank you so much for checking out the show. Okay. I love it when I see people in the chat room. You know, I love doing this. This is the part of me that's a reporter. You know, every night, 7 p.m. Pacific, I'm going to be going over to TikTok, and I do tarot card readings
Oh, fun.
every night. Yeah. I do about 50 to
Marvelous.
60 tarot card readings a night. So I miss that part of me that's the newspaper reporter. So this gives me a chance to, you know, to be that newspaper reporter.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it. And I think you're a fan. Like I said, I think you're a fantastic writer. We got to get you on again.
Thank you. I'd love to come on and talk about Gone on Vacation. That's a
Oh,
blast.
we could do that. That'd be a good one. We could be a good
And
one.
yeah, oh, Chad, you are ever so welcome. Yeah, and if you want to talk true crime and ghost stories, I've got that too. Got
Got
two
that
volumes
too.
of that out.
How can people find you?
I am at sylviaschultz.com, and actually, we have just started a new podcast. The true crime stories that have resulted in hauntings books are called Grave Deeds and Dead Plots. And we have just started a brand new
Sounds
podcast,
cool.
also called Grave Deeds and Dead Plots. And that is me reading stories from these books. So it is just a blast and a half.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So
Fantastic.
sylviaschultz.com,
I'll have to check that out.
Schultz. And yeah, check out Grave Deeds and Dead Plots. It's so much fun.
I will do that. All right. Well, thank you so much. It's always fun. And like I said, let's get you on again to talk about the other book.
Thank you so much, Charlotte. I really appreciate being a guest on your show, and I had a wonderful time as always.
I did too. You're great. All right. You have a great one.
Thanks. You too.
Bye. Yeah, I just love her, and I love her books. I like her writing style. I like her research style. I like all that stuff. Again, as I said, I'm going to be on. I'm going to sign off here. I'm going to head over to TikTok, 7 p.m. Pacific, between 7 p.m. and 7:05. Gives me a few minutes to, like, shift gears to do some free tarot card readings. I do past, present, future readings on TikTok. So if you want, would like to hear your fortunes or your misfortunes or whatever fortunes, I can do that for you. Tonight, we also talk about other things. We talk about ghosties. We talk about cars. We talk about earthquakes. We talk, you name it, we talk about it. But that's where I'm going to be headed. I do that every night except Sunday night. And to give you tomorrow night, Miriam Nancy Matz will be with us. It's casual Friday with Miriam Nancy Matz. And we started a discussion last week about stress in the holidays. And she had to cut it kind of short because she got in late. So she's going to continue it. So it's Stress in the Holidays Part 2. So that'll be tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific, we're going to be back into Sylvia's book. We're going to be continuing with those spooky holiday stories. So that's going to be pretty fun. All right. I will see you guys tomorrow, or I'll see you guys tonight. Have a great rest of your evening. And, have some pleasant dreams tonight, guys.
Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin.